Thomas DeZagua can really fire it in from the three-point line. Deadly three-point shooter. And Oklahoma State ends their long losing streak. It's good for the Cowboys. I thought TCU would pull away and win that game, Dusty, but that puts them in a really tough spot for the NCAA tournament. Swept by OU and split with Oklahoma State. It's not ideal for them.
No, it's not. Bad loss last night for TCU. They need their three-point sharpshooter back because they're not the same without him. Nice win for the Cowboys, man. That was good to see. I was flipping back and forth. We had a couple of Big 12 games on. The late slot last night was watching West Virginia, Kansas State. Was also watching Oklahoma State, TCU. Mark, one thing they've done all year, they've shot the three well, and they shot it well last night. DeZagua was great. I thought Lindy Waters played a nice game. He hit some clutch shots there late. You know, Ane was fantastic at the rim, Mark. I mean, he's going to be a presence for them for a while as a rim protector, just a freshman. Be excited to see how he matures. And TCU just didn't have it. Bain made some shots for him. Robinson, he had some bad turnovers, I thought. But nice win for Oklahoma State, Mark. We know how depleted they are and how much their depth has really taken a hit. But they fought, they played hard in a lot of these games, and good to see them on the right side of it last night.
I think for OSU, they've got some, you know, got some nice pieces. They got some guys that have some potential. And I think Ane, like you said, he'll be one of the better big men coming back in the league next season. And I think Lindy Waters is a good overall player. He does a lot of things well. He's a great, he can pass, can shoot, he's an excellent free throw shooter. And at the beginning of the season, when the Cowboys had some depth, you know, they were capable of winning some games. So it's not, to me, it's not like it's disastrous in Stillwater right now, but you can't afford to keep having the attrition that they've had on the roster this year. I mean, you don't set yourself up for any margin for error. Things happen and go wrong next season with injuries or transfers and defections. So
DeZagua will be nice to have back next year, Mark. He's shooting at 45% from three this year, putting up seven a game.
And I think that he would be doing better if he didn't have to play so much.
Right.
I mean, I think sometimes he...
39 minutes last night, Mark.
Yeah, he wears down a little bit and that stuff on his shooting. That gets kind of tough there.
You know, it was not an easy one last night for K-State. Don't know if you saw much of that one. Dean Wade did play, and ultimately Barry Brown Jr. has another fantastic game, and Kansas State's able to pull away late, though it wasn't easy, and they still sit atop the Big 12. So it would have been just a terrible loss if they weren't going to get out of Morgantown with a victory. I didn't think Dean Wade would play. I guess they felt that, you know, Kansas had gone there and gotten beat, and they didn't want to take any chances, and they elect to play him. He's somewhat effective, but at this point, any win's a nice win, and Kansas State still in position with a trip left to go to Lawrence, still in position to potentially win the Big 12.
I think K-State's in really, really, really good shape to win the Big 12. I mean, TCU's.
Here's my question: who's going to beat Tech, though?
Iowa State.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they can beat them in Ames at the end of the season.
Okay.
But look, Kansas State's got these home games. They should be really. I mean, they're favored to win those games pretty easily. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. I mean, they'll be 10-point favorites in each of those games. Baylor at home, they just beat Baylor on the road. Now Baylor might be a little bit more healthy by then, and who knows what Baylor can do. So that they win three games, they're at 13-5. I think that's about that's just the best that they could possibly be. And I think they'll win at TCU. I would think K-State can get it done there. If they do that, they're 14-4 no matter what happens at K-State.
That's right.
KU.
No, I understand. No, I think that's going to be their record. I just, as great of a win as that would be in Fog Allen, I just don't think they're losing in the fog. So I agree. I think they get to 14-4. I was just looking at it, and I mean, I'm not completely drank the Kool-Aid, but I like what I'm seeing from Texas Tech, man, and it's not going to surprise me if they make a run. I forgot about that game at Iowa State, but I think they're going to beat Kansas at home this week, Mark. And I think that they're really hitting their stride at the right time right now.
I think they'll be favored to win that game.
What's the tiebreaker scenario between? Because I know K-State, Texas Tech, they split. You happen to here's Texas Tech down the stretch. Kansas at home, Oklahoma State at home. Go to TCU. They get Texas at home, and then at Iowa State. So
I got them going 4-1, even though their schedule is tougher than K-State's. I still have Tech going 4-1. I got Tech, KU, and Iowa State all finishing tied for second at 13-5.
Okay.
if it's all a tie at 13-5, then you add all the teams together and you have who's got the best record against the other teams. And then you throw out, you basically break the tie for last first, which is really weird to me. I think you would break the tie for first, but you throw out the team that had the worst record, and then you continue to go on through the tiebreaker scenario there. So, and I don't know how to put all that together, but K-State.
I like it. I like that you're on the K-State wagon. I'm rooting for them. I want to see them win. One thing I really like about them, Mark, is they got three key seniors and they've got great leadership. So I think that's gonna pull them, through some tough spots down the stretch.
K-State tied for the Big 12 Conference Championship with Kansas in the 2013 season. KU swept them, so KU got the first seed in the Big 12 Conference Tournament and basically considered the league winner that year, even though Kansas, in some of those winning seasons, they did tie for the conference championship. But the last time other than that, Kansas State, the last time they won an outright conference championship in basketball was 1977.
Lon Kruger was there, right?
I think Lon was gone
okay.
by 77, but that was a team that, they lost a heartbreaker in Oklahoma City in the NCAA tournament to Marquette, who went on to win the NCAA championship that year with Al McGuire, that was the head coach. They lost that game 67-66 and could have easily won it, and then Marquette didn't lose again and went on to win it all. So K-State, we talk about they have a lot of tradition in basketball. They haven't won the Big 12, Big 8 conference championship tournament since 1977. So it's been a long time since they've achieved at the top of the level of the conference, only once in the last 40-something years. So it'll be a big deal if they can win it this season.
No question. All right, so here's something I've got for you, because I think TCU's now found themselves in some real trouble, Mark. I mean, they had a huge win a couple Saturdays ago at Iowa State, and then since they've lost three straight, no shame in losing to Kansas, but as you mentioned, lose to Oklahoma at home, and then you lose to Oklahoma State last night. They're 5-8 in league play. They got Iowa State at West Virginia, Texas Tech, Kansas State at Texas. That's not trending well. I thought TCU a couple of weeks ago was almost a shoe-in to be in the tournament. I don't know at this point. I think they're very much on the bubble and trending in the wrong direction. How many conference wins do they have to get to make the tournament? They get it to eight?
I think eight.
I don't think they can go 3-2 in their last five.
No, I don't think they can either. I projected them at 6-12. I think they can. If they
so how many? How many we have getting in? Six? You got six from the Big 12 getting in?
I think six, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it'll be iffy. I mean, like, I've got OU, I think the best that OU could do is 7-11.
Correct.
If they were 7-11 and they won at least one in Kansas City, and I think that they would have to, again, I don't know if at that point they would either be 6th or 7th in the league, then they would maybe have a chance to get in. OU, they'll have to beat Texas and West Virginia at home. And then I think the differentiator would be to beat Kansas at home to get them to 7-11. If they don't beat Kansas, they're going to finish 6-12 because I just don't winning at Iowa State and winning at Kansas State. Don't see it happening. Don't think it's going to happen. So 7-11 in the league for Oklahoma, and man, they would have so many things like kind of fallen their way in the non-conference. For example, they played Wofford. You don't think anything. They beat Wofford pretty easily. Wofford's they're unbeaten in the Southern Conference. They're 23-4 overall. One of their other losses is to North Carolina. They've just got some teams on there that they don't have a bad opponent on the non-conference schedule. And that's one of the things that the committee looks at is your quadrant wins. Mm-hmm. And OU's going to have a bunch of quadrant wins based on what it did in the non-conference portion of the season. Also, you're going to look at who's on the bubble with them. And there just aren't a lot of other teams in that range where, say 30-35 at-large teams that have a whole lot better resume than OU would have at that point. And so it comes down to the bid stealers. And, if teams that are in some of these leagues win a conference tournament that wouldn't get in, that, say, for example, American Athletic Conference, Houston and Cincinnati are going to be guaranteed teams to win. But if somebody comes from the back, say Tulsa, wins that conference tournament, that steals a bid because both Cincinnati and Houston are getting in. Examples in other conferences too. But I don't see OU going 7-11. I think they'll be 6-12, and that won't be enough to me.
I don't think there's any way you can get it at 6-12. 7-11 is a stretch. Matt kind of pointed out, the new way they're looking at things and with the net and I just seen today that think they were, I'll have to look it up, but they were top 40 as far as net goes. So you're exactly right on their non-conference. It's going to bolster them and help them. 6-12, no chance. And 7-11, it's, like I said, it's iffy. That Texas, LU Texas game is a big one in Norman on Saturday, Mark. You got, I mean, you have to win, you have to beat Texas and West Virginia to even give yourself a puncher's chance to get the 7 wins in conference play.
And again, the problem with West Virginia, they are a grease fire right now. They're terrible. But at least they've got some big bodies they can put out there, and that's what it gives Oklahoma fits.
Problems.
Yeah, they can't. If you give up a minus, 12 or 14 on the boards, it doesn't matter where the game's played. You're going to have a hard time winning that. And I don't think, the OU home court is that big a deal. But if you think it is, then you love OU basketball. I get out there and watch these games and try to support the team to help them win. They're going to need those three games. If they win the three at home, they'll have a shot. It's not out of the question for them to get into the tournament. If they don't win those three home games, I don't see it happening.
Texas, you think Texas comfortably in?
I don't think they're comfortably in either, Dustin.
They've got a tough schedule down the stretch, too.
Yeah, they're at least one game over 500. I think that they've got, their opportunity, they could win at Baylor. They could win at home against Iowa State. They should win at home against TCU. And I only projected them to win one of those, Dusty, so that would be 8-10 in conference.
Do not have a good non-conference.
No, their resume would be, it's not that good. You're right.
OU at
7-11 would look better.
I think the Big 12 gets at least 6 teams in. I think 7 is possible. 8 seems like a stretch for me. When you really start to, we can make scenarios for different teams. These teams are going to beat each other. I think 6, probably, if you had to put percentage of my highest percentage, 7 would be after that. Amount of teams that get in from the league.
Right.
And I think the ones that are as much a question for me as anybody would be TCU and Oklahoma right now. And again, TCU for me, I would have thought after they won in Ames, Iowa, not very long ago, that they were, no doubt they're getting in, but you lose a player and all of a sudden things can, they can change pretty quickly. And they have for TCU here these last couple games.
OU's got a lot of work to do to win Saturday.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Every time that they go to the gym, they get their work cut out for them. It's not a guarantee.
I mean, there's no guarantee a single game left on the schedule, Mark.
No. I'm with you on that.
But it has made for a fun Big 12 season to watch unfold. Hey, we did have some breaking news today. Let's welcome in the Missile. Missile, how are you today?
Doing all right, man. How are you?
Doing well. You sound better today. I'm going to say that you've passed the sickness.
You're not quite yet.
Still there?
Still there.
Well, your acting's getting better because I didn't notice it first, so that's good. What one thing we have not mentioned yet on this show, we did with Craig last hour, the record-breaking contract signed by Manny Machado, the largest free agent contract in American sports. I'm surprised that it got up to 10 years, Josh. 10 years, $300 million. What do you think? Padres overpay for Manny Machado?
I mean, the length. I don't have a problem with actually paying him $30 million a year, but it's the length of the deal is what?
10 years, like, man.
I mean, by the end of that deal, he's going to have to be a first baseman.
Yeah. You know? 26, he'll be 36.
Or maybe a DH.
He'll be 36 at the end of the deal, Mark.
Well, what's the player option? I mean, it really doesn't. I guess it doesn't matter. I mean, if he's the only reason he would exercise the player option after 5 years of that contract is because he's going so good. And I still don't think anybody's going to want to pick him up at that age and pay him more.
No, I don't think so either. He'll be 31. So, I mean, if you can con somebody into giving you even more money than the $30 million he's already making, I guess good for him. But at the worst-case scenario, he's got $300 million guaranteed coming his way. That's a big win for Manny Machado. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just the way baseball is always going to operate. I don't get it. I don't understand these double-digit year contracts in baseball, Mark. I mean, it just seems like, like Missile said, who even knows what he's going to be like in 10 years, what position he'll be able to play. And from a motivation standpoint, it's just such a large amount of money for such a long, extended period of time to guarantee somebody when, I mean, we've seen it time and time again. It typically does not work out for these teams when they sign these players to these long-term huge deals. But doesn't matter. It's a huge win for Major League Baseball players and Manny Machado. 10 years, $300 million, as he will take his talents to San Diego. And the Padres have bought one of the best young players in baseball, Marcus. And now, I mean, the big question, what's this mean for Bryce Harper? And when, ultimately, do we see Bryce Harper decide where he's going to be playing the next piece of his career?
It's kind of a small market win. I mean, for because all of the big heavy hitters, the power brokers, the large markets in Major League Baseball have decided they're not going to be interested in Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. So it gives a team a chance that has kind of been outside looking in to get a superstar, which is fine. That's fine with me. It's a good deal.
All right, so Missel, Bryce Harper, is he going to get on par with Machado? Less?
I think he'll get about the same. I think he'll get less years. I think he'll get 30 mil a year. I'll say 8 years. I don't think he'll get 10.
I thought Mark was going to hit it on the head at 7 years, 30 million a year. Earlier, when we didn't know the years on Machado, we just knew he had reached a deal. I thought Mark, I would have said the exact same thing as Mark. So I'm gonna go there. 7 years, 30 million. But if you're Bryce Harper and you look over and you see Manny Machado get 10 years, 30 million, it's probably at least a piece of you that's a little upset. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to take your phone calls here today. Also, might have a special guest to help us. We'll get him when we get back. Tell him when we come back. Okay, we got Barry Sanders Jr. We were talking about Liz Frank injury. Mark and I were talking with Craig last hour, what Marquise Brown just went through. And a friend of ours, Wild Aggie Bill, Texas show, and he said that Barry Sanders Jr. has dealt with this injury as well. So we're going to try to get a little bit more information on exactly what this is and also pick the mind of the former Cowboy running back when we get back. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on the Monsters of the Midday.
And I highly recommend them. You can go visit their website to see all their great work at firstclassfenceokc.com or call them at 295-6484. And they recently just were upgraded to an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They can handle any of your fence needs from residential to commercial, all at very competitive prices. Let's welcome in Barry Sanders Jr. to the program. What's up, Junior? How you doing, man?
What's going on? How you guys doing?
It's good to talk to you, man. It's been a little while. So.
Yeah, it's been a minute, yeah.
Hang on. Is it okay for Mark to call you Junior? Like, do you go by Junior or you go by Barry? I mean, I don't want Mark making you feel uncomfortable here.
No, that's all good. Usually, if something's printed, I like them to say Barry J. Sanders. But, you know, in conversation, sometimes I introduce myself as Junior, so... No worries, man. No worries.
Okay. Barry J and I go way back. I thought I could call anyway.
Yeah, you can. Mark.
we'll call whatever. Anyway, hey, you had this Liz Frank surgery, and we thought you'd be great to provide some insight into that and your experience with it. And then we got a lot of other things we want to ask you about too. But tell us about how you were diagnosed with the injury and what happened afterwards.
So it is confirmed that Marquise, he's got the Liz Franks.
Correct, yes.
Wow, okay.
He's already had surgery on that, yes.
Okay, yeah, so mine happened my junior year, and it was a non-contact injury, which was crazy, and I'll never forget it. And it's actually a play that's on one of my highlight tapes. You know, I'm running down the kind of the right sideline. I went to go make a cut from right to left, and I felt a numbness on the top of my foot, like someone had stepped on my foot. And it was really odd. And then I kept running, and then I felt a pop. I felt a pop on the top of my foot. And then kind of in the highlight, you see me jump up. And then when the play was over, I was like, okay, somebody stepped on my foot, no big deal. It wasn't until, you know, afterward, people were saying it was a mid-foot sprain. I didn't know what a mid-foot sprain was. And then they started talking about, okay, there's this Liz Franks ligament that, you know, is on the top of your foot. And... anytime I got those x-rays, what was so frustrating was that all the x-rays that I got, they didn't see much separation in my metatarsals in my foot. And so usually when you tear your Liz Franks ligament, you see an extra widening of your you know, foot bones when you put weight bearing on them. And so most of the doctors in Oklahoma, they were telling me, hey, we're going to have to put, you know, if we do surgery, we're going to have to do pins and screws and, you know, put some metal in there, and I knew I was completely against that. And you know, Marquise, do you know what kind of surgery he got? Anybody familiar with surgery?
I'm not sure, Junior. I just only read about it. I haven't talked to anybody. There are different degrees of the surgery, correct?
I'm sure there are. Yeah, I'm sure there are. I know for me, I went out to go see Arthur Ting, Doc Ting out in Fremont, California, and I know he did some kind of wiring. You know, permanent wiring. So so, you know, there was no secondary surgery to go take anything out. And, you know, he put, like, a button on the left inside of my foot and then, like, put a wire, I guess, to pretty much tie the metatarsals together. You know, I wish I was more of a doctor to know the scientific term, but that's kind of, you know, in gist of what that was. But I've had zero problems with it since. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it impacts every cut. Like, you have to get very comfortable cutting again, because any lateral movement, I mean, it's super sensitive. But in due time, I mean, I was fine. I know I lost a little bit of ankle mobility in my right ankle, but no, with the right surgery and the right rehab, I mean, it's definitely something that shouldn't be too bothersome.
Did you have a reoccurrence of that injury?
Yeah. No. So I guess that was a part of the story. So when I originally heard it, it was week six of the regular season. And so kind of, when people were talking about surgery, well, some people were saying, hey, 6 weeks, non-weight bearing, you can come back, you should be good. So I believe that. I was like, okay, all right, cool. I'll wait 6 weeks. You know, I wore a boot. I think I tried to do crutches for a little while, but I was like, no, I can't do crutches. So I did the boot for 6 weeks, and then I came back during the playoffs. I think it was week two. We were playing Bridge Creek, and I'll never forget, like, the first play of the game, I get the ball. I think it was maybe a sweep left, and I try to make a cut, and I felt a pop again. And I think I ended up playing the rest of that first half, and, you know, I kept telling Coach Bogart, I was like, hey, do not run me outside. You know, I can run north and south, but I cannot, you know, anything outside. But yeah, it was, I did try to come back. And then after I heard it that second time, that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to have to go ahead and get surgery on this.
Okay. That makes it a lot more clear for me, Dusty, because I definitely can remember that situation dating back to that, and how it's got to be frustrating because, like you said, that, hey, people are telling me it's just a sprain, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. No, okay, that hit home for me.
So, what was your recovery like, Junior? What was walk us through, if you can remember, how long non-weight bearing, and then ultimately until you were back to your normal self. What was that? What was that timetable?
Yeah. So I know I think I had surgery in December, and I know I was back playing baseball after spring break. So in May, or April. Yeah, April, May-ish. I was back playing baseball. And I'm trying to think, how long was it non-weight bearing? I think it might have been 3 months, I would say, 3-4 months. But once I was able to put weight on it and start kind of getting back in the groove, it you know, the recovery process really, was pretty speedy, in my opinion. Like I said, it's been, I guess, almost, 2011, so it's been almost 8 years, which is crazy. But no, I mean, it's a little while for not weight bearing, but once it heals, you start feeling pretty good. It's just a matter of getting comfortable. And like I said, your ankle mobility, just being immobilized for that long. That's kind of the toughest part, just growing, you know, getting that comfort back.
Lincoln Riley was at the Davey O'Brien Awards in Dallas last night, and he compared Kyler Murray to your dad in a way, that kind of brings that kind of explosiveness, to the game. It's tough for him to get that comparison out because because your father's held in such reverent terms when it comes to comparisons. What did you think of that? And just give us your thoughts on Kyler.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big fan, man. I'm a big fan. And he actually was at our EA Sports Bowl in Atlanta. So actually, that was my first time I got a chance to see him. He walked our red carpet. And so I got a chance to say hi to him there. But no, I'm a big fan of him. I mean, he's very electric. He throws the ball very well. Got good accuracy, and you know, I'm looking forward to watching him on the next level. But I think the, you know, the comparison is fair. He's explosive. He's a, you know, he's agile. He makes guys look silly. You know, if he was in the running back position, I think that would be a natural comparison. I mean, you don't hear too many quarterbacks being compared to him, but that's just probably because of his stature. You know, just being kind of a shorter guy. But no, you know, I don't think it's too far from the truth. No, not at all.
What do you think about that? Just the stature. Is it crazy to think that a guy that's probably going to be sub 5'10" is going to be a first round pick and a starting quarterback in the National Football League, or is it about damn time?
No, I think guys have shown it can be done. You know, it definitely. I'm sure he's going to have to make some adjustments, just like every other quarterback. But you know, I think he will. You know, given the right opportunity, he'll be able to succeed. I think what makes what I learned from my football experience, I mean, the coaches who, you know, start building their team around an individual player and brings out their strengths, you know, and just puts him in a position to succeed. I mean, I think that's kind of the biggest thing. Like, hey, put Kyler in a position to succeed, and he'll succeed. And so I think, you know, if he's in the right situation, he'll thrive.
Dusty, I think that's a big – I mean, that's kind of important. But we're seeing more and more teams now that they're adapting to what is coming out of the college game where it's not like a unique situation. There are a couple of – like, I think RG3, when he went in, coming out, what was that, 14, that – it was tough for teams to kind of picture a quarterback being that mobile. But now Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl that way, and there are other guys that have had some success at the position. So I think more teams are open to, okay, we have to play to this system rather than what's typical for the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think Baker and Lamar last year kind of showed, you know, it's definitely a winning brand of football.
It is. They've had a lot of success. It's going to be fun to watch exactly what Kyler looks like. Well, Barry Jr., we really appreciate it. Or Barry J. Sanders, I'm sorry. We really appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on, adding some insight. And anytime you ever want to hop on, dude, let us know. We'd love to have you.
Okay. Yeah, no, appreciate you guys. Yeah, let me know if you guys need more questions. You know, this was fun. This is good.
Hey, thanks, man. Much appreciated. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. All right, you guys have a good one.
Barry Sanders Jr. That was some great insight. And you know, that's what I was kind of talking about. We're obviously talking about Marquise Brown. He's got a Liz. He called a Liz Franck. I'm going to take him. He went to Stanford, and he's had the injury. So a Liz Franck injury. And it's that tendon that kind of keeps the bones in your foot in place, as you heard him describe it. I thought that was a great depiction. It's the way it's always been described to me. And when that pops or that's gone, now there's displacement amongst those bones in your foot, and they can't necessarily stay together. So they've got to fix that. And, again, I don't. It sure sounds like, Mark, once he was fixed and healed, he didn't have any type of reoccurrences moving forward. I think you probably ask 100 people, and there may be a lot of different answers. But it would be great somehow for Marquise, and I doubt it with the timetable. But if he was able to do something prior to the draft, even if it's a really late pro day, Mark, I think that would be advantageous to him. I just don't know from a time perspective, if he's going to be, because the last thing you want to do is try to rush back and go before you're fully ready. That could be detrimental. Definitely not worth rushing back before he's ready to go. But if, you know, time permitting, he was able to get back out there and do something on a uber late type of pro day, I think that could potentially alleviate some concerns and still allow him to put some of his speed on display.
Listen, the entire time we're sitting here texting back and forth on that, I just couldn't get out of my mind that maybe that was an injury that happened at Oklahoma State. So now that it's in my mind, I remember back to the time in high school, and people were having a hard time figuring out why he wasn't playing. But, I mean, I think that makes total sense, is that it's a tough injury to diagnose.
It's a very tough injury to diagnose.
It's the same situation as the Jones fracture in the NBA, basically. It's kind of different but a little bit the same, where you're hurting. And it's not right, and then people are telling you, well, if you rest, it's going to be okay, but it's not okay, you know, because you have to have it fixed or really, really rest. You know, so I can see you're wanting to get back out there, and all this time there's no diagnosis there, and so that's why it's such a tough injury to either figure out and then fix, and that had to be the same way with Marquise Brown, I think, because clearly if OU would have known that was what that injury was or properly diagnosed it, they wouldn't have had him running around out there trying to play in the bowl game. You know, I mean, you get that fixed.
Yes. No, I agree. And I'm glad that he said that, because at least my experience and people that I've seen have it, it is a tough injury to diagnose. And you can get some false reads when you take pictures of it. And I don't know exactly what the diagnosis or what the situation in Oklahoma was, but I would think that that potentially might have happened. But he's gotten it. He's already been under the knife. He's already had a surgery. Now it's just kind of a waiting game to get himself back, get rehabbed. And, again, not going to do anything at the combine, not going to do anything at pro day. Could he potentially schedule a late pro day? I don't know about that. But I still think – I mean, I don't think he gets out of the second round. And, again, it's not going to shock me if we still see somebody apt to go up late in the first round, early in the second round, and take him. Just because I think the tape is that good.
No, he's not. I don't think this is going to cost him more than one round. I wouldn't think that. Okay, we need to take a break. I'm in studio today. Dusty's in studio. I'm here courtesy of First Class Fence. We've got a lot more coming up in the show today.
I want to talk about two things when we get back, Marcus.
Sure.
I want to talk a little Kyler Murray. We're kind of just talking with Barry Sanders Jr. about that. He spoke You mentioned at the Davey O'Brien. We got some audio from that. And also, we got to talk a little bit more about Mr. Big Chest. That's right. Antonio Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Big Chest. That and more.
Mr. Murray at the Davey O'Brien Awards ceremony last night. Dusty, any thoughts of what was said last night?
I mean, what a year for that young man and his family. I mean, what a decision to have to make, Mark. Should I take? The millions of dollars and be a top 10 pick in baseball? Or should I wait and see if I can be a top 10 pick in football? I mean, again, we're talking about a scenario that nobody's ever had to decide. I mean, he's in a class of his own. So just bravo to that young man for putting himself in this position. Not surprised at all by what he had to say, though I did think, I loved hearing from him yesterday, Mark. Because he was comfortable, he was relaxed, he's made his decision. That crap on Dan Patrick, I'm telling you, I said it then, I'll say it now, asinine. I don't know what Gatorade paid him to make that tour and to go around and do those interviews. It wasn't enough, though, because he wasn't ready. He's now ready to be in front of a microphone, and I was glad to hear him. I could hear the relief in his voice, that now he can talk about things and he doesn't have to be so quiet. He also talked about one of the things that everybody wants to know about and exactly how tall he's going to be at the combine.
I got to go in there and prove to an organization why they should invest in me. So I'm ready, and y'all will all see how tall I am pretty soon. So
the question will finally be answered. I can save the drama. I think he's going to be just under 5'10". I think that's going to be what he is.
Because everybody on the everyone on the internet here today, it seems like last couple of days, anybody that's got a picture standing next to Kyler Murray, they're posting it.
Oh, of course.
This tall, he's that tall.
I saw Corby from our sister station down in Dallas, and he was he actually did a double shot at him next to Baker last year at the Davey O'Brien, and him next to Kyler yesterday at the Davey O'Brien. So, you're right, though.
I saw that.
Everybody's getting them out there. All right, last one from Kyler. I thought this was interesting, Mark, because, and nobody really knew, right? I mean, I threw this out there week five, and I told you I'm calling NFL teams trying to ask about him, and nobody had done any homework on him because nobody thought the guy was going to play football. And Kyler Murray talked about how he didn't even know what NFL teams thought about him.
There's a love for the game that I can't really explain, but obviously, my career, as far as, the early stages of my college career, wasn't looking too hot. So, I didn't know how the NFL felt about me. And then after this past season, it was to go in and, kind of put myself in the best possible situation. I think I did that. And, now you got a 5'10 kid projected, first round and playing quarterback, which, is not normal. So I think I did pretty well.
Yeah, he did well, Mark. He did well. He helped his draft stock about as much as anybody we've ever seen. Because, again, I think if you ask people from before the season, they wouldn't have had a draft grade on him. And now, it seems pretty universal. This kid's going to go in the top half of the first round. So it's been fascinating to watch kind of this whole thing unfold. But he's 100% right in what he says, Mark. I mean, there's a lot of other things that we've talked about, the perfect storm of Kyler Murray and all the things that he can't control kind of falling into place with Baker, with Mahomes, Kingsbury, just offensive philosophy. All those things are real. But his play has put himself in this spot, Mark. His ability to throw the football the way that he can, athleticism that really unmatched from anyone we've seen play the quarterback spot, not named Michael Vick. I mean, he's done everything right along this past football season to put himself in this very unique position.
Well, there's not much question now over where he's going to go in the draft.
I don't know if anybody, I see anybody have him outside the top 15.
But he's a quarterback,
right?
In a class where he's in the top, no worse than two, in my opinion. Maybe he's three. So he's way up there, and there's a bunch of teams that need quarterbacks. It's almost a can't-miss proposition that he's going to go high enough where this decision became a no-brainer. Maybe in October or November, there was a little bit of a concern, and I think that at that time, teams aren't really focused on what they're going to need or where they're going to have their draft position and thinking a lot about Kyler Murray and that kind of stuff. But now I don't think there's much risk in this decision whatsoever.
Do you worry about the – and maybe I'm naive, and, like, I get – I understand, you know, having I did a Syracuse game this year. Eric Dungy's the quarterback. He's, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 240, 245, built like a linebacker. He called it his body armor, right? Now, they ran the quarterback a lot. He wanted to have that weight and that bulk to deal with the blows he's going to have to take. You know what I'm saying? He called it his body armor. So I fully understand that if you have a little bit more size, you can, you know, your body naturally can endure a little bit more punishment than not. But I just don't get caught up in the in Kyler Murray's durability the way I hear some people, Mark, because I've seen guys that should be the most durable players ever, and they're not. And I've seen guys that are frail and flimsy and never get hurt. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say it's kind of just by chance, but to me there is a large element of that, is that when you go out there and play football, everybody out there runs the risk of getting hurt. And I find it hard to believe that a guy that's never really had a major injury, if you're gonna weight that much of your decision based off because he's a little bit smaller, we're too scared that he's going to get hurt. I don't know. I just don't fall in that camp.
Well, I also saw some comparisons today I'm losing my mind today. Lamar Jackson. He is a, Lamar Jackson.
It's a terrible comparison, by the way.
He was interception prone. He threw for a ton of yards in college, but nowhere near a precise of a quarterback as Baker Mayfield is. Different body size and all those kind of things. But if you talk about an NFL quarterback, I think Kyler Murray, even though he's short, is a lot more equipped to succeed at that level than what Lamar Jackson was.
He's a much better thrower of the football, Mark.
Yeah, I think Lamar Jackson had 4 picks against Mississippi State or something like that. He just kind of throws it. I mean, it's not with precision and accuracy.
I saw something on Twitter from Pro Football Focus, and it was more so about Lincoln Riley. But it had, since they've been doing, I think it was 2013 or 14, since they've been tracking quarterbacks and their overall, their metric for quarterback rating, top 3 quarterbacks were all Oklahoma quarterbacks. Baker and Kyler had the exact same grade at 94.6, and then Baker's 2016 season was the next highest. So that was that has nothing to do with running. So, I mean, just to kind of illustrate your point, he's an excellent thrower of the football. He just also happens to be a ridiculously world-class athlete when he runs as well.
Well, Russell Wilson is small, but he hasn't been hurt.
Neither is Drew Brees. I mean, Andrew Luck, he's a big, strapping young man. I like him a lot, but, man, his career almost ended. I mean, I just don't think – Carson Wentz, a perfect example to me, Mark. What is Carson Wentz? 6'4", 6'5", 240? Prototypical, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, has he finished the last 2 seasons?
No, and he's considered injury prone.
Okay, so I mean, and again, like, yeah, Kyler Murray could get hurt, but I mean, I don't know. I don't put the same amount of stock in his size to tell me, well, this kid's going to have durability issues. I don't know, man. He protects himself and alleviates contact about as well as anybody I've seen. I want to get to Mr. Big Chess. We're going to hear from Antonio Brown. I also want to figure out a story from Mark Rogers back in the great ice storm of 2007 and potentially your phone calls. All that jam-packed in the next hour. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here. But DeAndre Hunter, your Dan Davis, best defender of the week. Mark Rogers in studio for our good friends at First Class Fence. Mark, tell me what's going on at First Class Fence.
First Class Fence is one of my favorite places, and they are an A-plus Better Business Bureau rated company. When you need a fence, call the only company that makes sense, First Class Fence, where one call does it all. FirstClassFenceOKC.com, 405-295-6484. Exceptional customer service before and after the sale. I can attest to that. These guys do a great job.
Okay, now
see Buzz Williams last night? Was he sweating profusely?
Well,
sure he was.
He only does it one way, Mark, of course.
Yeah, he very rarely is perspiration-free.
The antiperspirant doesn't work for him.
No, it does not. It does not. Virginia, that is
You can buy in if you want.
Very unique program in college basketball. Very unique. Because This is no surprise. I'm going to drop some huge knowledge on you here. The best way to win in college basketball consistently is to have elite players and elite coaching. All right. But Virginia has done it with really without many elite players. In the last 5 years, they finished in the top 10 four times, and they only have really, from those groups, they only have four players in the NBA.
Brogdon's pretty good.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm telling, that's not taking a shot at those guys that they have that are in the NBA. It's just telling you that they don't have a bunch of them.
I think Tony Bennett's a heck of a coach. They get it done with defense, Mark.
They get it done with defense, and I think that they just don't miss a lot on guys that he wants for his system.
Right.
He knows what he needs to recruit, and I think that's a big problem that what we see that's going on at OU right now is that they've missed on guys and they have huge holes. Like they just have huge holes in the roster. They've got to have a postman. They don't have a postman. Where Virginia has, they've got experience usually every year, but they've done it without having a bunch of guys in the NBA. Do you know what two programs have finished in the top five or the top ten the last five seasons? There's only two.
Top five or top ten?
Top ten.
Okay.
There's in the last 5 years, there have only been two programs finished in the top ten each of the last 5 years.
Well, my guess would be it's going to be Virginia because you're talking about them.
No, they were four.
Okay, four. Okay. Last, let me think here. Let's put on my thinking cap real quick. Can I say North Carolina?
They are not one of the two. Or not? No, they're not one of the two.
The Duke Blue Devils.
Not one of the two.
That seemed too easy.
It is pretty easy if you think about it.
Kansas Jayhawks?
Yeah, they're one of them.
Yeah, should be. And the other team would be Missile. You got anything? No one?
Wildcats, Kentucky.
No.
Then Nova, Villanova.
Villanova.
Villanova has finished in the top three each of the last 5 years.
Yeah, Villanova. Good call,
so,
Missile.
Kansas has got 12 NBA players from those last five teams. They don't have a bunch of superstars, but that just tells you how much talent that they've had roll through there.
Right.
I mean, it's easy to see why they're consistently good. You put 12 guys in the NBA, yeah. Villanova's had eight. I mean, in the history of the Villanova program, they've had about as many run through there in the last 5 years as they had before. And they even won a national championship. So, you know, Kentucky's had 14 NBA players, Duke 13 NBA players, all these. That's how you consistently stay good. But Gonzaga, Virginia, those are programs that I think that do it with elite coaching and a system.
Yeah.
Because they've had a lot fewer NBA players.
I think that's right. And by the way, Nova's won two national titles in the last 3 years, Mark. Not just one.
Yeah, correct. And they've been in the title game three times. So
Jay Wright's flat out getting it done. That's for sure. Good little I like those numbers. I respect Tony Bennett, and I really like his basketball teams. I don't know, Mark, whatever it is. It's always hard for me to trust them in tournament time. Just always feel like a lot of times his teams struggle to score the basketball. And I don't know. I just always find myself finding reasons not to have Virginia going far in my bracket. And I kind of feel like I'll do it again this year.
Plenty of reasons to feel like that when they lose to a 16 seed. And yeah, I don't know. It's their ability not to get separation. But isn't that what I think the consistency? Any NCAA tournament game, I don't care who you are. I mean, you go up, you know, one of the classic examples of this is the 88 OU Kansas game. I mean, one game, you win, you know, teams that are better can lose. It happens all the time. It's what part of the greatness of March Madness is. But to play that kind of defense and have that kind of system, that's why Virginia's rated so high every year, is because they're usually going to outwork you. And they've got guys that buy into this system and they know how to play. I mean, right? Because over the course of the regular season, even though they've lost very, very few games, it's more consistent that they are going, you know, to win more than not.
Yes.
Whereas anybody's vulnerable in one game.
Absolutely, no doubt. Jay Wright, man, he's done a fantastic job. Tony Bennett's done a great job, and you know, I would say they're starting to get NBA players. But you're right; they for a long time they've done more with less than just about most coaches out there.
The only other team that would have kind of fit that mold of which this is odd. I mean, North Carolina's been in the last; they've been in the top 10 three of the last 5 years, but they only have four guys off those teams in the NBA right now.
That is surprising. That's a low number for them.
And they have a national championship.
Yes, they do.
In that span.
Yes, they do. Hey, I do want to, we do have College Hoops on tonight. Anything on tonight's slate catch your fancy? Iowa State, Baylor. I don't think Baylor's got enough in the tank. They're not healthy enough, but that's the only game in Big 12 play tonight.
That's the, yeah, that, so a lot of teams this week have had the middle, or I guess two. Oh, yeah, Texas had the middle part of the week off, but Kentucky, Missouri, no. Tennessee, Vandy, no. Those are the two ESPN TV games. It is not a good night for Dusty college basketball television.
No,
we need the NBA back.
Oh, we do.
Can we break some news?
Yeah, we break some news. What you got?
Sports news on WWLS, the sports animal.
Dude, I don't know about you, but I have missed the NBA. Really have. The NBA has been gone from us since last Thursday night. It will return.
Come back, please.
This Thursday night.
Come back.
The Thunder will return to action on Friday night. And so here on the Monsters of the Midday, we love a good spectacular.
We
so
love spectacular.
Thursday, we're going to have a second half of the NBA season spectacular.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. Should we maybe mix it up? Should we have a variety of words? I mean, because we just had a NBA trade deadline spectacular. As much as I love spectacular, and it's going to be spectacular, should we just for, you know, the sake of being a little bit more original, should we come up with something else?
No, because spectacular is... It's spectacular. It's what it is. And that's the level that we're going to hold ourselves to. It's okay. Not going to be just a second half of the season preview or, you know, a decent second half of the season preview. It's going to be a second half of the season spectacular, loaded with information, opinions, and guests. Something that, you're listening to this show right now, you wouldn't want to miss.
You sold me. I'm in. I'll be there. I will be there. And I have already, Missile and I have already begun assembling the guest list. So it will be a second half of the NBA season, a post-All-Star break, spectacular, right here on Thursday. I'll tell you what else was spectacular, Mark, or the opposite of spectacular, however you want to look at it. But this Antonio Brown stuff, man, it reached a climax last night as he was on Instagram, on any social media he could get on. He had decided he wants to be known as Mr. Big Chest. And he was letting all the NFL teams out there know that if they've got guaranteed money available and they got a chance to win a Super Bowl, then they might want to take a look at him. But I'll let Mr. Big Chest do the talking for you. Here's Antonio Brown's post on Instagram from his treadmill.
If your team got guaranteed money, tell them call me. AB can't do no more guarantees. So we clear. I want y'all to be clear. And understand something. This is not a game, people. This is not for show. This is not to be cool. This is strictly to inspire you that, yo, no one could determine your destination but you.
He lost his dang mind, Mark. That man lost his mind. You were defending him yesterday. I dare you to defend him today. Go ahead, Mark.
I was trying to point out yesterday that the entire mess in Pittsburgh is a multifaceted issue that involves many people, including the coach, I think some of the owner, definitely the players. And so for one guy to take a shot at the other, I don't know how to defend one or not. I don't know why it was a bad day to take Antonio Brown's seeming side of anything. And I thought in there that, just like we discussed last week, it's never good to talk in the middle of a serious cardio workout. I mean, he was having a hard time getting it together. I'm sure he's in great shape, but maybe he was a little hopped up on, kind of high on his own supply yesterday. But that was a bad look for him with other teams to bring in money into this equation, because he's been very selfish. And if he's doing it for reasons that are, you know, I don't, you know, if he's doing it for reasons because he's just got opinions on what he wants to play, why he wants out of there, if he's got a problem with Big Ben. But if it's a problem with money and he's sitting out, not as good a look for him.
He doesn't know what it is, Mark. He is high on his own supply. I mean, right. he's lost it, man. I mean, because what you're saying is right. His big beef with Big Ben was relationships, right? Well, now he's talking about money. What is it? It's everything, Mark. It's whatever Antonio Brown wants it to be. And that's what I'm saying. As great of a talent as he is, you got to go. Like, he's not thinking sane right now. What I hate for the Steelers, and if, you know, he meets with Art Rooney the second today, and then he posts a picture of them two with their arm around each other, and he says, had a great meeting with Mr. Rooney today. We discussed a lot of things, and we cleared the air on several issues. We both agreed that it's time to move on, but I'll always have appreciation and gratitude towards the Rooney family and the Steelers organization. So he's basically saying it's over. I mean, they're trading me. At this point, Mark, all he's doing is jeopardizing and hurting his tradability, his value out there to other teams. So you got to think, if you're the Steelers, you're like, dude, shut up. We get it. We're going to try to move you, but please, will you keep your mouth shut and allow us to try to work a deal out behind the scenes? Because, I mean, we just kind of sit and wait for Antonio Brown to pop up one way or another, whether it be social media or something else. I mean, it's just, it's been kind of crazy to watch.
Well, there's two guys. I mean, it's almost like he took a page a little bit at the end of the year from Le'Veon Bell. I mean, it's awful for two of the best players in the league to basically set out to use leverage against their team. Crazy. And that doesn't say, I mean, that the rest of the team has got to be turned off by that.
I'm just telling you right now, not showing up to week 17 when you still could have made the playoffs, that I still say, contend, you can get mad at Big Ben and people all you want to. When you no-show on your team, essentially, on that Saturday before the game, and give the coach no, you put him in a situation where he has nothing to do but sit you down, you've quit on your teammates. That was going to be a hard fence to mend no matter what. So I don't know. I mean, Antonio Brown's a great player. I would just say, though, whoever out there wants him, you better have a very, very strong and veteran presence in your locker room. Because you need somebody that's going to be able to check that dude at the door. Plain and simple. Right. You let Antonio Brown walk into a locker room and run the show, it's going to be a fiasco. If you've got good, you know, you've got good leadership in your organization, coach, GM, and that trickles down into the locker room with the players, I think it's fine. But if you go somewhere they don't have those things in place, Mark, I think you're asking for more problems than what you're willing to going to be able to deal with.
If you're a Steelers fan, you just got to think, man, how could things be any worse than this is right now? I guess they will get a pick, but, you know, I mean, you've got a team that you feel like can win. You're kind of on the edge of whether should we tear it down or try to build it back up? Because I thought that they are, even though they didn't make the playoffs, Dusty,
they're a good team,
to me, were pretty good. I mean, they had a shot to beat you in the AFC.
No, I thought they were a good team. I had them late in the season in New Orleans, and speaking of controversial calls, a controversial call on that one, and I'm not so sure that Pittsburgh wasn't the better team on that Sunday in New Orleans. They lose the game ultimately and don't make the postseason, but I'm with you. I mean, if they would have gotten in and things would have just fallen their way, they could have beaten just about anybody in the AFC this year. That being said, it did not happen, and now they're at this point, though, and I said this earlier with Craig, Mark. I mean, at this point, you have to. I think if you're Mike Tomlin and you're the Rooney family, I mean, you've got to figure out a way to get back to some discipline. You've got to figure out a way to get back to getting your locker room and your leadership in line. And I just don't think that's possible with Antonio Brown. Like, that didn't work. They were unbelievably talented. But, man, it did not work. So I think that for a long time, they've always just – they're one of the more quality-run organizations in the National Football League. And it's because of that family, and they've put good people in the right places. And it looks right now Mike Tomlin may be in question if that's right. But if you're that family and you're Mike Tomlin, to me, you got to look at this and say, allowing the players to run the team and do what they want has not worked. It has not resulted in championships. We've got to buckle down, and we've got to start running things the way that we've been accustomed to running things. And I just don't think that's possible at this point with Antonio Brown. And I'm guessing that was probably discussed between Art Rooney II and him this afternoon.
Yeah, that conversation that said that they mutually agreed to part ways, that seems to me that it didn't go very well for Antonio Brown.
I'm sure he just let him know what he wanted to do, and it probably did not jive with the way that the
step in the right direction for the Steelers, though. right? Not, I mean, look, okay, we're going to try to get for you what
I think
we
it
can,
is a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
so I'm saying the Steelers, is I think that the way that they've been kind of going about their business, though that they've been talented teams, it has not got them over the hump. So Le'Veon Bell is not going to be back, and it sure feels like Antonio Brown is going to be back at this point. And, you know, for me, again, that gives you a great opportunity to kind of do a self-evaluation of what's going on inside that locker room and get it fixed. Get it fixed now, from the head coach to the quarterback to anyone else that falls in line, and get everybody on the same page. Because clearly one thing that I don't think anybody can dispute, since before the year started, the Le'Veon Bell situation really just exploded in that locker room. We heard varying different opinions from different players. That locker room and the continuity on that team has been non-existent, right? They got to get that back. They got to get that back. And to me, that's a step in the right direction at this point, given how rogue Antonio Brown, I'm sorry, Mr. Big Chest is gone. You got to remove him from the situation. By the way, where do you come up with Mr. Big Chest? What is that? Did I miss something? Or is that, I mean.
Well, if you lost your marbles a little bit, that might be something good to come up with.
Mr. Big Chest. He's a little receiver. Mr. Big Chest? I don't know. Again, there's probably a joke in there that I'm missing. I don't quite think
there's a joke in there that you're missing. I just think it's very odd. Kind of odd, again, the way that he changes his opinion every day.
No doubt. It's definitely been something here in the offseason for the NFL, a little bit of a saga that we've been monitoring and watching. And it appears, at least now from ownership, what Antonio Brown's saying, Steelers going to move on from him as a wide receiver. When we get back, we're going to talk with Jake Trotter, find out exactly how fantastic his vacation was away from his children. Also, I got to get a story from Mark Rogers. You don't want to go anywhere. Keep it here the next 40 minutes. Out to Palm Springs as we bring in the Iron Man of the Sports Animal, Jake Trotter. Jake, how's paradise treating you?
National reporting here on the Sports Animal. I'm just checking in from our Palm Desert Bureau.
So tell us, what's it like? So how is the lodging, and how is everything at Palm Desert?
The lodging is great. You know, we went to, this is Arnold Palmer's in a home area. So we went to this restaurant a few nights ago, had an Arnold Palmer there, which was cool. Had some good food. The lodging has been fantastic. The weather could be warmer. But I say that, I hear it's like 20 degrees out there in Oklahoma City today, give or take.
Warmer, but not good.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been 60s, which has been really nice. You know, not warm enough to go lounge out at the pool for very long. But, you know, they've got hot tubs out here, and we've just been checking out the scene. We went to Joshua Tree yesterday and hiked around a little bit. You know why they named Joshua Tree that resort? Or that national park, you know why they name it that, right?
No.
Don't know.
So I learned this. It's because of all the Joshua trees on the park. It's a specific kind of tree that grows. I've never seen it anywhere else in my life, but it's all over the place at this park. So have enjoyed it, and coming back tomorrow night. So,
can you give us a description of what the Joshua tree looks like?
It's kind of like you've ever driven by a car dealership and they have those balloons that kind of fly around like Stickmen, sort of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of looks like that, I would say.
It's an odd tree.
Yeah, very odd tree.
Huh. So you usually, if you've decided I'm going to go to Palm Springs, you might be attending Coachella. Or you might be golfing at some of the nation's finest golf courses.
Beautiful courses but there, I hear.
It doesn't appear that those were two factors that went into your decision to attend Palm Springs. So,
well, I'm not going to lie. It is an older crowd out here. That's for sure.
Well, you kind of have an old soul, Jake, right? I mean,
I have an old soul. You know, we're talking about going somewhere in the country. Listen, by the way, this is my wife's decision that we came here. I had about 2% input.
Whoa!
So.
Easy there, big fella. Jeez.
What went into her decision?
I don't know. She just wanted to come out to California. She had some friends that had come out here who enjoyed it. And it's beautiful. I mean, you got the San Bernardino Mountains all around here. It's the only outdoor airport I've ever been to in my life.
It's an amazing airport, weird. Isn't it? I kind of like that
airport. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's outdoors.
Now be careful, because the last time I was there, you can go outside, but then if you try to come back inside, you got to go back through security. So be careful with that.
It is a little bit confusing. I didn't know what to make of it. So there's a chance I might run into some trouble tomorrow afternoon out there.
I got to say, I've had a chance to be out in Palm Desert a couple times. It is gorgeous, and it kind of felt like, you weren't fully satisfied with your trip, and you, just threw your wife under the bus, and we can't.
No, there was no bus. I'm just saying, it was her. You were asking me why I wanted to come out here, and the reason I wanted to come out here is because she wanted to come out here, so.
Well,
but I mean, I've had a great time and have enjoyed it. And, before the Rose Bowl guys, the Baker Mayfield Georgia Rose Bowl, I had never been to California before, which, considering I'd been to 43 other states, was just kind of a bizarre mark in my record. Now I've been to California twice, so I'm racking up the stats in the Golden State.
Have you been to the northern part of California? That'll be your next trip.
No.
Go to Napa.
Yeah, no Cal might have to be on the list next.
Just make sure you don't get
kind of making my way
up there, okay?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't think I'd recommend Napa to you.
Yeah. You have to really be a wine snob, right, to dig Napa.
Kind of, and it's definitely difficult getting around.
We thought about driving over to San Diego one day, but just kind of felt like that could go south on us pretty easily.
I don't know.
How far is it? About an hour?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know the distance.
I think it's like a couple hours. I think it was like a two-hour drive.
Okay.
San Diego is just kind of the same place, only with an ocean. I mean, it's just kind of chill.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I mean, you could go to
I feel like I got a taste of what that might be like. Yeah.
They just had to rescue some people that were stranded at SeaWorld. So today might be the perfect time to go. You missed it. They're not going to have that kind of malady.
Dusty, any kind of cuisine I should check out on my last day here?
I'd be the wrong person to ask on cuisine. Both times I was there, it was there was wedding situations involved, so I think all of our meals were kind of spoken for. So
taken care of. Yeah, that makes sense.
I would be of zero help. I think that area is really cool. Beautiful.
It's really cool. I wish I was more into golf.
Man,
than I am at
I'm
this
telling
point
you,
in my
there's
life.
Some just absolutely awesome golf courses right there where you're at. So,
yeah, I mean we're staying on a golf course, so it's. I mean, I'm doing this call about 10 yards from a fairway.
You could just get a golf cart and just cruise around the course.
I could
cruise around. Take in a couple shots, maybe have a beverage.
The other thing I've noticed is that on this particular golf course, my golf game would be treacherous. People would be in danger, I feel like, because there's not a lot of give on this course.
Well, don't hurt anybody, please.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no one's going to get hurt since I'm not playing golf.
Allow the locals their safety. Please, Jake. Hey, the one question as a parent that I have, and I think many do, because I believe you told us last week, this will be your first vacation since your children born, right? Just you and the wife?
So, first vacation without the kids right. Since we had kids that was not a wedding.
Okay. So
we've gone to a couple weddings for weekends, but as you said, Dusty, it's not quite the same thing.
What's that been like for both of you, you and your lovely bride? Have you been constantly checking back with the grandparents, I'm guessing, who's keeping the children? Have you been able to actually enjoy your time away, or have you been on your phone just constantly hoping and wondering how they're doing?
So we learned this the hard way. So we went to a wedding in Ohio a month ago, and the kids stayed with my parents, and we FaceTime Dorothy, our who's 2.5 years old, and our Theo, who's one, from the plane on the way there. And that was a catastrophic mistake, because then they were upset that we were gone. They didn't notice we were gone until we FaceTimed them. So we learned from that. We just have, now they're staying with my wife's parents, and we just have them send us pictures. So we get to kind of, see what they're up to. And we miss them like crazy, but it is better that would be the big advice I would give, is if you're going away for the first time, do not FaceTime. Just have whoever's watching them to send pictures. That way you can kind of stay in touch with what's going on. But yeah, we've I'm ready to get back and see them again. But for the most part,
you know, it's a quiet place.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm getting yelled at for talking too loud here, guys. So
what's going on? Where are you?
Tell them the geese are making more noise than you.
I know, I'm getting reprimanded here. So yeah, no problem. Okay, guys. So
we need to let you go. Why don't you hand that guy the phone? Yeah, tell him we're on a big time radio show.
We'll talk to
this
him.
Is the number four radio
I
show
know,
in
right?
the country.
You're right. Yeah, I better skip
him?
Out here.
Hey, Jake, enjoy the rest of your trip, and tell that guy he can't big time you like that anymore. You're the Iron Man.
Dusty's next time Dusty and Urlacher go to Palm Springs, they're gonna have that guy taken. He's gonna have a new job. They're gonna have to get him fired.
Get him kneecapped, right?
You guys could probably handle it.
I don't know if I'll be. I mean, you know, I had a good time in Palm Springs, but I don't know, man. San Diego. Whew. I think he might have. I think the next time he plans a trip with the wife back to California, he might want to find an ocean somewhere close, Mark.
I'm really curious as how he did arrive or how his wife arrived on Palm Springs, because it's he's 20 years too early to be there.
I know. What do you think the average demographic there, 55, 60?
Oh, no. It's 3 years to dead. 3 years from death to dead.
Okay. Very good. Hey, you are in studio today for some good friends of ours at First Class Fence. Tell me a little bit more about that fantastic company.
FirstClassFence.com online. They are A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. That is no surprise to me. They have great customer service, family-owned business that is going to take care of all your needs, and whether it's custom, residential, ranch, you name it. They can handle any kind of work with the fence. All of those exhibitions are online at FirstClassFenceOKC.com.
Okay, so when we get back, we're going to have to talk about why Mark is in studio. And I think that's going to transition us nicely onto, A, what's going on out there as you're out and about in your commute. But even more importantly, Mark, you've been keeping secrets from me, and I don't appreciate it. And I'm going to need you to go back about 12 years after this break and take me back to the ice storm of 2007. So gear up, get ready, that and much, much more as we close up shop on this icy Tuesday here on the Monsters of the Midday. Careful as you get out and about. I believe the sleet ice beginning to come down. I think it's going to be coming down for the next several hours. So be weather aware and give yourself plenty of time to get to your destination. Mark is in studio today for First Class Fence. Mark, I was talking with our boss, talking with Chris Baker, and we both were kind of struck today. And I mean, I've known you for a while now. Doing this show for over 4 years together, and I thought you had seen a ghost today. We're on the phone. Like, I mean, it was like, I want to say you were scared, but you were just very concerned.
Yes.
We're on the phone talking.
I got no problem admitting this.
We're on the phone talking, and you're driving, and we're talking about the show, talking about some stuff, and all of a sudden, I mean, it's like, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I mean, we're just having a conversation about sports. And he's like, oh, my gosh, it's starting to rain. And he's like, the temperature's dropping. He's like, this is going to be bad, man. This is going to be really bad. He's like, I'm just telling you right now, I can't do this remote today. He's like, we're going to have to move. We're going to have to do something. This isn't good. I'll call you back. I'm calling Baker. And then I talked to Bake, Mark, and you called Bake. And he said the same thing. He said he's known you for over 20 years, and that was as exact same thing I was describing. It's like you were just very concerned. And so Bake and I get to talk, and I just kind of thought, that's kind of weird. You know, Mark, usually things don't really get to Mark, but the thought of the ice got to you. And then so Bake and I start talking, and I think I figured it out, Mark.
Okay.
I think you've been suppressing this ice storm of 2007. It's like you're Vietnam. Because
I've told the story on the radio many times, dude.
You've never told it.
What are you talking about? I've told it. It's been. No, I've told the story many times. I was asked to come over to the station to at Channel 5 at the time so I could answer phones on Christmas Eve for, like, I don't even know what it was. I don't know. But anyway, I decided that I was going to make an attempt to do it. Then I decided, similarly to today, that I'm screwing it. I'm not making an attempt. I'm going to go home. And so on the way home, on the Broadway extension,
this is back in 2007, right?
Yeah, the car that I was driving at the time was having a hard time getting up the hill there because the road was pretty icy, and so I hit the barrier. The car's wrecked. There are people stranded all over the highway at this time. It was just almost impossible to pass. I had a nice UPS driver try to come give me a push and help me, and it didn't work. And so, look, I'm sitting there on the highway, and if not for one sales manager, Tom Comerford, at Channel 5 at the time, who picked me up in a big truck on the way back from the station, it would have been spending the night in my car on the highway because it was shut down that bad. That was a terrible, terrible, terrible ice storm.
So, okay. Now, hang on a second.
Mm-hmm.
So, you lost control. You hit the median. Is this right?
No, it was just, the car wouldn't move. I mean, it was okay. Like, there was no traction to be had on the ice. And so, going up a hill,
it wasn't happening.
Okay, it wasn't stopped.
So at this point, now, you've got your cell phone. Were you just calling everybody you could possibly find in your phone book?
Dude,
and
I
pray
called,
that somebody could come
station,
get you? I mean,
I
how scared
our,
were you considering you not, might have been stranded on 235 in an ice storm?
The car wasn't wrecked at the time. Okay, so I called. I mean, it was the car was driving, but it wasn't a wreck. It was just that it was not moved. It was stuck. And so I called the station. And we were on the air at the time. I even pled over the airwaves if anyone was driving down Broadway Extension to stop and picking me up. But if you're in a car, everybody had kind of the same problem. And this wasn't like a time you're going to out be driving around. I mean, it was really bad. So the only thing that I could have done would have been like walk to, and it was freezing. I mean, walk like a mile and a half to like a convenience store or something that was down the road. So, yeah, I mean, and really, I was there for about 4 hours, 4.5 hours. I mean, wow. That was the only shot that I would have had.
Okay, so you ditch the car, you hop in the truck with the sales guy from Channel 5, and he takes you back to Norman. When did you get your car? Because I heard the car didn't turn up the same way you left it.
Well, I went back with my dad a couple of days later to try to find the car, and the car was gone. All right? And so I don't
dude,
know.
Where's
that,
your,
you know,
dude, where's your car?
Car?
Yeah, I mean, this
I
is
didn't
perfect.
Know what happened to the car. Dude, called... It went through all these things that basically call this place, that place, and other people had a similar story to me. Is that finally about the same day that I was just going to say the car has been reported stolen? That's what I'm going to do with the insurance. The car is found, and it's found at an indoor towing place in downtown Oklahoma City, and it is not in very good condition. It had been banged up by a couple people hitting it.
It's people just driving by, plowing into your car, sitting on the side of the road?
Yes.
Like a demolition derby car or what?
That's what it was. So, look, okay, so, look, and I had another incident on ice where I hit an off-ramp, and this hasn't even been that long ago. I mean, knocked the piss out of myself, banging my head off the top of the car, even in a seatbelt. Which was a bad deal. And so I'll admit, I'm not very good with the ice, driving on the ice. Never owned big trucks or cars that drive well on the ice. So today it's 32 degrees, starting to ice up. By the way, not very far from where I was supposed to be today. Interstate 40, shut down right now. I'm just not messing around with the ice. Call me a puss if you want. I don't care. I'm good.
I would not use that kind of language.
That's fine.
I just think it's interesting. I'm telling you, I've known you for a while. And what I heard today from you on the phone, I've never heard before. I don't know what it's like to see a ghost, but I feel like when Mark saw that first piece of precipitation hit his car, it was as if he saw a ghost. I mean, that's kind of like what I heard come through the phone. It's like, oh, my God.
I want to be an hour away
you
with
have
all this
been,
weather coming in.
You've been through, you know, sometimes, Mark, we go through events in life, and, you know, that really has an impact on the rest of the way we deal with things. And I think clearly back in 07, that cut a lot deeper than I had any realization. And now I think we're starting to kind of understand you a little better. It's been a productive afternoon for me.
I know
Mark Rogers better today than I did yesterday. That's good.
It was not, I don't think it was quite as bad as it was looking like that it might be at the time because apparently the weather is a little bit warmer. But again, it was 32. I figured it was going to go down. So, look, I probably could have made it today. I'll chalk one up for this for constructive criticism.
No.
I'll say that that this was not my strongest hour. So
no.
But I'm
going
to continue to use caution when it comes to the ice.
I think that's very well said. And it is starting to come down now. I'm going to say all this, and you know what's going to happen. I'm going to get into an accident on the way home. Like that's, I mean, there's probably no denying that. I'm going to take my time and do my best to make sure that doesn't happen. I'm not in any way criticizing your decision-making today, Mark.
I'll criticize it for myself.
I just thought that as we look back and we see what you've been through in your years in the ice, I can understand now why it may strike you a little bit different than some.
Here's what's worse. Here's what's really bad about all this is that, you know, every time that we go out to First Class Fence, they take such great care of us. And, you know, they hooked me up with all of the Reese's candy earlier this year around Christmas. And, Dusty, I think Kaylin had made homemade chili today. And so it really is just kind of – I don't feel good about this at all. So trust me, I know that you're not saying that you're being critical of me or our program director is not being critical of me, but I'm going to take a hard look at myself today as well through this.
Toughen up, Rogers. Now, do you struggle when you go, like, to the ice box in the freezer? Just as the side of ice, does it give you the willies, or is that okay?
Only if I'm driving. And I definitely try to be careful on the ice when I'm just on my 2 feet, because that's not the best form of transportation for me either.
Let me tell you something. Anyone, when you're walking on ice, be careful. I think that's as dangerous as being in a car.
Right.
If you think you're under control too much, when those 2 feet are on some ice, ooh, bad things can happen, my friend. Bad things. I do hope this. Everybody be careful as you're out and about again, as I mentioned. I do think the temperature's starting to come down. We're starting to get some precipitation. So as you make your drive home, it could be some slick conditions. So please be careful. And if you've learned anything today, if it gets so bad, you can ditch the car and utilize the sports animal as your vehicle to find a sanctuary and to find a ride to wherever it is that you may need to get to. So
that's one of the days that it was so bad that the power of the sports animal did not come through for me.
Well, if it's Christmas Eve, that's about as bad a time as you could possibly get stuck in ice. Everybody's moving around. Everyone's got things going on. I hate to say it, but you were probably the last thing on anyone's mind on Christmas Eve 2007.
You're correct.
All right. Well, you don't have to worry about making it through the conditions, Marcus, because I believe you're already there. One more time for our good friends at First Class Fence, please.
Well, they are our good friends, so I feel like I've let them down today. I will try to make it up to them at a future time. FirstClassFenceOKC.com, you can see all the work that they do, whether it be commercial, residential, as we said, agriculture on a ranch. They will build you a great fence. We'll be out there.